our little podcast?
Absolutely. You have my undivided attention for 30 minutes, Jim.
All right. So I just went through and put together some structures. I don't know if you saw that email that I put through, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was communication and self-leadership and kind of how those couple things go together. And, you know, you are so talented in so many different ways, but I think one of the real amazing parts of you is this idea of self-leadership. Can you open up a little bit about how you started that process and how did you go through that process of self-leadership and why is that so important for leaders?
Sure thing. Interesting thing is that I didn't even know it existed 10 years ago. I had no clue. I was clueless. Today, I realized it's so important that I literally wouldn't like to live without it. I would never pick a partner who doesn't know it. So I've realized that there's a subject that is so important that it affects everything in my life to such a degree that it's literally not worth living if I don't know it. So what is this subject? Well, it's about the ability, understanding, knowledge of techniques that you can use to change who you are now in the moment, but also in the future. And as an example of that is, if you're going to have a meeting and you need to be grounded and present, you should induce oxytocin before going into the meeting. And you do that by, for instance, looking at photos of your daughter or son or, you know, your kids or something. And now that is self-leadership. You are now chosen to be in another state in that meeting. Another one is testosterone, which has shown that you can increase your chances of getting a job, getting a higher bid in negotiation. And if you increase testosterone just prior to that, so if you, for instance, look at 5 or 10 videos of your favorite team winning, you've increased your testosterone levels. And by so, you've changed the very outcome of the meeting. This is self-leadership in the short run. In the long run, the truth is like this. Whatever you repeat, you become. I didn't know that. You know, I had an idea that might be the case, but I think it's a scarily powerful subject. Before ask your next question, I just want to refer to a study that was done last year in London. I think it was Oxford who did it, and they did it for people who were depressed, clinically depressed. And it was a 1 hour presentation. 1 hour, nothing more, just 1 hour. Presentation was about neuroplasticity and that humans are able to change behaviors and emotions and who we are and how we relate to the world. So it was about that. That was the only thing it was about. And then they compared that to a control group, and it showed that consistently the group who got the 1 hour session on neuroplasticity were better off in their depressions, were relieved from their depressions, and some actually moved away from that. And that's 1 hour of self-leadership of the idea that we can change our mind. So what a subject, man.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think you take a different take on self-leadership, something that a lot of people don't go into, but it's self-leadership of the mind. Now, there's neurotransmitters, there's neuropeptides, there's neural pathways. All of those are so important in self-leadership to control and rule our emotions, our feelings, our connection with other people. And you went down a path to discover this, and this is not a common thought in self-leadership, but without it, it's really hard to control your emotions in a lot of ways. You wrote that book, The High on Life, which is the concept of an angel's cocktail and a devil's cocktail. is something that I refer to often. Can you explain how you figured that out? How you first of all, tell me what an angel's cocktail is, and tell me what a devil's cocktail is, and tell me maybe a little bit of the process of how did you figure that out?
Yeah, well, it's a simplified metaphor for our ability to induce these newer substances in ourselves at will. So a lot of people induce a devil's cocktail, not maybe at will, maybe they don't know that they're doing it, but it happens a lot in our world. And the way they do it is they increase levels of cortisol, which is a stress reaction hormone. Maybe they do that by watching the news too often. Maybe they do that by caring too much about the money they have invested. Maybe they do that by worrying about their future. Maybe they do that by thinking little about themselves. You know, they constantly create this devil's cocktail in their system, which makes them a bit sad, a bit down, a bit dark. They see more problems than opportunities after a while. Now, the opposite is somebody who induces an angel's cocktail, which is then a combination of these things, like small levels of cortisol, which comes from doing exciting things in life, riding a horse or going to a Ferris wheel or asking someone out on a date, you know, like short bursts of cortisol. That's part of the angel's cocktail. Even maybe adrenaline, you know, go skydiving, parachuting. But it could also be, as I said, testosterone by looking at videos of repeat wins of your favorite team. Could it be oxytocin by getting a hug, by helping another person, by being generous? Could be dopamine by visualizing the goal of what you do in life and why you do what you do is so important for others, or how you can, or endorphins, where you laugh at something or you go to the gym. Now, that person will have a much better view of life. They'll see opportunities instead of problems. And the key here is to drink angels' cocktails on a more daily basis, because what we repeat, we become. Mm.
That's so important. And how does that, you know, correlate into communication? You know, so getting that mindset right, and then you being the master communicator that you are and the master teacher of communications, to give concept on that, you know, when I was going through the program in Malaga with you, the mindset portion of that program was so amazing to me, in that I not only watched how I communicated change like that, but I noticed it in everyone else's communication as well.
Mm.
I mean, it's incredible to think about, you know, how your mindset and how that mindset is and how that self-leadership is and how that translates into a better communication.
Mm. Yeah. Let's just take a super simple example. Let's imagine a person comes home after work. And they're high on dopamine, you know, they've had a great day, they're looking forward to the next, and they're looking into the future, and they're thinking of future projects and what to do and so on. And maybe they're a bit high on cortisol as well. It's been an exciting day, but maybe a bit of worry, you know. So they're coming home with a bit of a mix of an angel's devil's cocktail. Now, when they come home with that mix, they won't really be in contact with their family. They won't really, you know, see their eye contact. They won't really receive or get a good hug. And when they ask questions to their kids, they won't really listen either, even if they want to. Now, if that person only took 2 minutes prior to going in, looking at photos from where the kids were small, you know, like maybe these kids are grown up, they're 12, 13 now, and they look at pictures from when they were like 3 or 4. They look at something like that that induces this oxytocin sensation in them, and now they go in to their family. It only took 2 minutes, but now when they go in, oh wow, they will see their eye contact. They won't just receive a hug, they will give a different hug. And when the child answers your question, how was your day, they will so attentively listen. Now, the interesting effect of this is that now the family feels that you are there, that you are present. The entire evening will go differently. Entire evening will be affected by the emotional state you come home with. You know this is the case. So that is a way to see it from a public speaking point of view. This is your family. But as a public speaker, you got 1,000 people in front of you. In that case, they're your family. They can hear it in your voice if you actually care. They can see it in your eyes if you actually care. And a public speaker who cannot harness these neurosubstances, who can't shift between these emotions, well, they're never going to be world class, and they're constantly going to try to understand what is going wrong. And it's the mindset at the base of it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Some of the things that you've come up with and thought about and articulated, and they've certainly changed how I see the world. Now, a lot of leaders are very externally successful, but internally they're exhausted, kind of chaotic. How do you think that self-leadership is so often, as far as the mindset, is so often overlooked in all sorts of leadership development training?
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that. I don't really. It seems like a lot of companies I contact, they work with fairly classical leadership models, Myers-Briggs and so on, DISC models and stuff like that. That's been around for a long while. And self-leadership is quite new. The idea of leading yourself is very it's not new, because like Marcus Aurelius 2000 whatnot years ago had the context and the concepts right, but it's still oddly underused when it comes to leadership trainings, which is just super strange, because the equation is simple. If you can't lead yourself, how can you lead others? Like, if they see that you can't lead yourself, why will they allow you to be their leader? Like,
Yeah.
just common sense, really. And also, by learning how to lead yourself, you also immediately understand how to lead others. So it's the shortcut of shortcuts when it's when becoming a true leader.
Well, I think that's important. You've got cultures who are so dependent from top up leadership, or I've got to manage people, I've got to manage this, I've got to manage that, and I think it's better if you have a whole team that is just engaged in self-leadership to where they know how to lead themselves. I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer, but it's so simple, but it's something we've missed.
Yeah, I just couldn't formulate that question better myself, my friend. It's weird, strange. But maybe, there's a time for everything, and I think that there's a chance that our awareness of our ability to lead ourselves is becoming greater, and by so it may change the way that we also train leaders in the future.
Yeah. One of the TED Talks that you gave, my favorite one, this is how I found you, was the magical science of storytelling. I was so enamored with that. I watched it a couple times, and that's kind of how I led into connecting with you and going through the Presenter Master program.
All
It
right.
was such so brilliant on how you did that. Can you tell me kind of how you went around figuring out how to give that TED talk? And I think that was that your second one that you did?
PowerPoint was the first one, yeah. I think the key is, well, the way I function is this. I'm actually a trainer, an educator in my like the foundation of what I do. So I started off my career by doing literally 15 years of training in these subjects, self leadership, but using neurosubstances in sales and marketing and body language and PowerPoint and storytelling and so on. So 15 solid years. And then I was going to do my TED Talks, and that was quite simple for me then, because the only thing I had to do was pick out the content that I've been delivering for 15 years and ask myself, which is the best part, what is like the best of the best of the best of what I do? Where do I get reactions which are like, wow, that was crazy, David. How did you do that? So the content had been refined over 1.5 decades. So yeah, when it came to the TED Talk, it was more like sitting down, asking myself, how do I build a TED Talk on storytelling that no one else has delivered based on what I know and have experienced works? And that's when I just sketched it on a whiteboard like this and this and this. I'll put that together like this. And then when I'd done that, it was more about boiling that down to being as efficient as humanly possible, word by word. So increasing the bit rate as much as possible. And the last thing is I just made sure that what I've realized over all of these years is that nothing else matters than feelings. Nothing. Like if people don't feel your talk, they won't remember it and they won't care and they won't be focused. It all comes down to feelings. So I asked myself, am I creating a feeling every 30 seconds? This is what we call spices in Presenter Mastery. So how can we make people feel this talk?
One of the things that was interesting, and I don't know if I've ever told you this, but the when I saw that TED Talk, I was Googling the science of storytelling because I knew there was some science behind that. And a little bit about my personal story is I'm a recovering drug addict and alcoholic. I got sober at 22 years old. And when I started going into recovery, there's a thing called the Big Book. And it's about this big. It's not really that big, but the first 164 pages of the 500 or so pages is about the program and how it works. The back two-thirds of the book is all about story. And the story is always the catalyst for somebody changing. And in that case, for me, getting sober was not easy. But I wouldn't have started unless I heard somebody else's story. And they said, Jim, I was just like you. I couldn't put it down. I was dependent on it. And then went through this pain and I sought help. And this is what happened. This is what it was like. This is what had happened. And then this is what it's like today. And had I not heard that story and from many other people in recovery, I wouldn't have that catalyst to go through the process to change. And if you think of the structure of a story, there's always a character that wants something, and there's a problem getting there. And then he finds a guide who gives him a plan, and then there's challenges and difficulty going through the plan, and then there's that internal growth of that person, and then they win. But there's that formula, like who saved the cat, of how a story works. But you gave a different perspective on that. It's like, okay, a story has dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin and a little bit of, well, oxytocin, and you've got a little bit of testosterone, a little bit of neuropeptides that are, oh, maybe a little bit of cortisol, but the chemical process of that story is why it hits us and it grains us, and that's why I don't think change can happen without a story. Whether we're talking about an alcoholic or whether we're talking about a culture or whether we're talking about, personal development or self-leadership.
Love that. That's a good take on it. That's a very interesting take on it. Yeah, truly. It's a bit like I've got an example where the there's an Englishman. It's like there was a time when the English mile, nobody could break the record of it. Like it was absolutely impossible. I think it was going to be under 4 minutes or something like that, and nobody could do it. And then this guy comes
Bannister.
around.
Was that
Yeah,
Roger
Bannister.
Bannister?
Bannister. Yeah, and he runs. And he breaks it. He breaks the record. And then after that, when people have that story as a reference, they know it's possible. And then just person after person after person just keeps break like going under 4 minutes as well. Boom, 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 boom. But that would never have happened without a reference story. So yeah, stories like yours, where you hear how others have overcome something, gives you the perspective that it's possible. So we're mentally restricted by the stories we hear and the stories we tell ourselves.
Yeah. I think, the I wish I would have had, the idea of the neuropeptides and the neurotransmitters and all of that when I was going through that. Because you think about it, when I'm going through adolescence, or from my perspective, a lot of people start drinking very young age, but going through adolescence, there's so much chemicals that we never learn how to rule our emotions. And then we come out of that, and there's no chemicals, and our emotions are going up and down and up and down and up and down. And, the doctor says, well, here's something that'll help, gives you a little pill, and it doesn't. I mean, it's fixing the symptoms, but that self-leadership that you're talking about is, oh my gosh, it's so crucial. So crucial.
Yeah, I wish people would be taught it earlier in school, for sure.
Absolutely. One of the things, David, I would like to do is talk a little bit about, the presenter master's program and some of the teaching that you do and some of the programs that you offer. And I really want to share with people my experience. I've been through this program for about a year. I've looked at so many programs. I've spent tons of money. I've worked with so many professionals out there. This has got to be the best program I have ever been through. Just the quality of the materials, the thought process that you've put into it. I mean, this is something that going through a lot of programs, I will see them and say, yeah, I got that. That's pretty good. I could have done something similar. This is so far beyond that. This is like, after a year, I feel like I'm just getting started. I still have so much to do and so much to grow. It is just the best program on the market. And I was talking to somebody recently, and they're like, oh, you got to go to the National Speakers Association, the convention, and it's a weekend, and it's going to cost about X. And I'm like, no, I said, it's cheaper to go to the Master Presenters program. It's a year long, and it will change you more than a weekend seminar will. So thank you for doing that. But can you
Thank you, Jim.
tell everyone a little bit about the programs and the things that you're doing and how you're training speakers.
Sure. Thank you for those words, Jim. That is quite extraordinary. Thank you so much. I appreciate hearing that. I do this of the passion of giving people the tools to be their best and also be able to present their ideas, thoughts, in order to create the life that they want. And that's what the Presenter Mastery Training Program is built on. It's built on a guy who has devoted his life to never ever reading another book on communication, never ever reading a book on public speaking, never ever attending another person's training program on public speaking. I have simply never done that because when I began, I realized that if I do that, my material will just be a copy of theirs. And so I just began by slowly and steadily observing what people were doing, documenting and why they did it and how they did it, analyze it, and then apply it to see if I would get the same effects. So I went through this four-step process a gazillion times. And as soon as I kind of hit the bottom of one particular discipline in public speaking, I just started with the next. So the discipline for delivery skills, for instance, is the one where I studied 5,000 speakers, 7 years, to find every way that we communicate the skills we use. Which came down to the third TED talk, which is called 110 Steps of Excellent Communication. And then I did the same for the discipline of storytelling. And then I did the same for this discipline of death by PowerPoint. And that's a heck of a lot of information. So what I did is I removed 95% of it, and 5% of it is left. And that is what is in the Presenter Master Training Program. It's simply the best of everything that I've learned, which I know has an immediate effect on people's ability to present and communicate. That's what's in there. I do live sessions online, master classes, we call them. I have coaches who do mindset training, content training, delivery training in groups as well on Zoom. And I think one thing that I love is that when you begin the program, you get to send in your video and get an analysis of all the 110 steps so that you pinpoint exactly. And like, it's unheard of the growth that you can get when a coach looks at your skills and goes like, that one, that one, that one, 71, 69, and 84. Just fix those and you'll grow tremendously. So yeah, I think that's my, at least that's my point of view on the program. And then you as a delegate, you've obviously seen it from the other perspective.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I've built this whole relationship with you because I'm watching your stuff and it's like Saturday mornings drinking a fine wine, but I'm drinking coffee watching David and I'm like, oh, this is so good, so I've got hours and hours with you and it's like, oh yeah, he's my best friend. You don't know me, but a couple of
Well, I have met you now though in Malaga.
But
Briefly.
it's just it's so good. It's like I can watch this over and over again. It's like everyone's a TED talk on steroids
Yeah.
for this, but
That's fun. That is
it's
fun.
so good. It's so good. I just I wish more people would I've talked to some really top-notch speakers and I'm like, you gotta go here. Well, how much is
Yeah.
it? And I said, this is how much it is. It's like, what? That's ridiculous. So I think you need to raise your prices, David.
Yeah, maybe one day. Maybe one day. We'll see. We want to reach a lot of people as well, so we'll stay where we are at the moment. But yeah, I've truly appreciated you in the program, man. You're always a shining light, and it always feels amazing when you log in and I see you on the screen. So thank you for all that time as well, and for doing this podcast. I wish you the very best, and you should definitely send this podcast to Lucas, who's the one who promotes our program, because then
I
you can
definitely
have
will, yeah.
people who can listen to it through that.
Yeah, I'll send it to Lucas. And the last thing is, all these people at the Presenter Master Program are getting these TED Talks. They're getting TED Talks. So I got one. I'm giving one June 14th, and I
Wow.
knew that they needed another one. And I said, "Hey, Colin, you want to do this?" And he goes, "Sure." And so I introduced Colin. So Colin and I are going to be in Swansea, in Wales, on June 14th. We're both giving TED Talks at the same place,
In way, like in England,
Yeah,
Wales,
in
Great
England.
Britain.
Yeah, I'm flying
Wow.
over. So
That's
you ought
so
to fly
cool.
over. And then there's all these other speakers that I've been talking to, and I just talked to another one. I said, "Oh, you've got to talk to." I'm introducing him to Sophia to make the connection so that they can
Oh, how
get set
sweet
up
of
with you.
you. That is
But
lovely. Well, considering you're in Wales, you should see if that coincides with if we have any Presenter Mastery live sessions in Sweden. You should fly over and attend one there.
Well, yeah, we could have a meetup in Wales right before the TED Talk.
What date was it?
June 14th is when the
Okay,
TED
okay.
Talk is. So I'm
I'm
going to
not
fly
when.
over on the 9th, and then my wife's coming with me, and then my daughter's going to come too.
Wales is
So,
beautiful, man. You'll love it there.
yeah. Well, I felt like we had a good talk. I felt like I have found a friend for life. I'm the biggest fan, David, and I will continue to improve. And when people like my wife says, "Oh my gosh, you have gotten better," I said, "Yeah, this program really works." So,
Yeah, man. Well, do send me a message when you're in Wales or when you're heading to
I
Wales,
will.
and
Will do.
I'll see if I can be around in some way. Maybe sometimes I'm there, so that would be
Okay.
awesome. Yeah,
That would be. Well, love
same
to
that.
Maria, love to the team, and I will see you again on the next I think I'm seeing you on Thursday. I'm going to give a testimonial on one of your events that you're doing there. So
Ah,
Alex called me and said, "Hey, can you do a test with me?" And
No
I said,
way,
"I
you
would
are. Oh
love
my
to do it."
God, that is so
Yeah.
brilliant. I'll see you there
Yeah.
then,
I
Jim.
said, "Absolutely. Absolutely." All
All
right.
right, you take care, my friend.
Cheers for now. Thank you again.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.